Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. Thanks for joining us on a short Saturday afternoon show of Let's Get Legal. Thanks for hopping on with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me, John.
Okay, we had a veto session this week-ish, and we have another one coming up at the end of the month. Remind folks what it is and chat about maybe anything that happened this week or what we're kicking the can towards the end of the month for.
Yeah, so the veto session is the fall session the General Assembly has every year. It's always just 6 short days, and it's traditionally designed for the General Assembly to evaluate any vetoes that the governor issued earlier in the summer. This year, there's really not many vetoes. There's really just one bill that was substantially vetoed. It's kind of unclear if the lawmakers are going to look at that or not. So this year is really kind of devoted to trying to figure out some of our bigger issues. There's a lot of energy conversations happening. Transit, obviously, is the biggest issue on the table. There's a lot of federal kind of responses that people have been talking about and hoping to maybe get across the finish line this month. So far, nothing happened here this week in the first 3 days of the session. So they'll be back at the end of October for the last 3 days, which could produce a lot of legislation, or we'll see if none of it even gets across the finish line.
Why have I not seen a bunch of ads about the fiscal cliff like I saw in May? Do we know that nothing's going to happen, or do we know that there's maybe an agreement that's already happened, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they have been pushing for this again in advertising.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention it, because lawmakers asked the RTA the same question recently.
Really?
Why? Where did ads go? You know, you had so many ads, you know, last year in the spring when we were talking about this issue, like it was a major deadline issue. Obviously, they're gone now, so lawmakers were a little critical of the fact that the advertising campaign even happened. So I honestly don't know what's going to happen with transit. I know people really want to get it done. It's a huge priority, but I think maybe one of the reasons you're also not seeing, you know, an advertising push to get lawmakers to act on it this month is because there's some new data that shows it's kind of been pushed off a little bit. The RTA says it's not really going to start until about the middle of next year, which we all kind of assumed it was going to start at the beginning of 2026. So lawmakers have some time. I don't think lawmakers want to use all that time, but they do have some time to kind of talk about this issue more if they wanted to.
Interesting. So, and this is just me surmising that maybe a push right now might get them a longer term deal that isn't as attractive versus maybe they feel like a spring session next year or sometime early next year, if they have a little longer till we reach this cliff, could maybe give them a better opportunity to carve out a better deal for them in the future. That's just my hypothesis.
Yeah, I think certainly one of the concerns from the transit agencies is any restructuring that the General Assembly is going to do to their service boards. You know, lawmakers have talked a lot about making a more integrated system among all of our transit agencies in the area. And I think that maybe there's a little bit of internal concern from them, just that, you know, there could be some job losses on their end because the General Assembly decides it needs to be restructured. So maybe that's why there's not such a great sense of urgency. I know some lawmakers kind of think that's the case. So we will see. But it seems to me that the biggest sticking point is just that lawmakers are having a hard time coming to an agreement on how to fund public transportation going forward.
You write in your story at Capital News Illinois about how federal issues might play a big role in the veto session that we have towards the end of the month. Is this in relation to like executive orders, or are we talking about the big beautiful bill? What is impacted locally that they need to talk about?
Yeah, I think the big beautiful bill is maybe a little bit more of a long-term thing, you know, something that might get talked about more in the spring or in the coming years, because various portions of that bill don't really take effect for a couple of years. What's really on lawmakers' minds right now is everything happening with the National Guard, with ICE, immigration. They're very concerned, especially the Democrats from Chicago, who are seeing, you know, these often at times very brazen arrests happening in their neighborhood. They really are hoping they can do something that would have some sort of impact that their constituents might, you know, feel is trying to accomplish something to kind of limit the ability of ICE and the federal government to do this stuff in the Chicago area. The reality is, it's states can't regulate what the federal government is doing. So lawmakers are really digging into areas of U.S. law that really haven't been explored here to see if they can limit ICE from, you know, kind of like Brandon Johnson's executive order. They are looking at if there's ways to maybe limit ICE from operating in certain areas that the state controls.
Hmm. Interesting. I know the bears are on their mind, too, and I only know that because you wrote that in your story, which I'm reading from right now, Ben. Tell me why Springfield has to get involved in something like this, because to me, I feel like, oh, the Bears want to go to Arlington Heights. They work out a deal with Arlington Heights, and we're done.
Yeah, that's kind of a question for the Bears. You know, the Bears are the ones who really want state help in some capacity to make this move out of Chicago. And the latest thing that the Bears are looking for is not public funding for their stadium. I think that has been kind of confused a lot lately. They're looking for legislation in Springfield that would allow massive projects like what the Bears are proposing to receive a property tax freeze for a certain number of years, which would keep the value of or keep the property taxes that they're paying down at the current level, which is pretty low for the Arlington Park site since it's been entirely demolished. They don't want the property's value to continue to grow as construction happens, but the Bears aren't actually even playing games there. So they're looking for legislation to make that happen. Eventually, they're also going to want infrastructure dollars from the state, which I do think lawmakers are pretty open to. But the issue here is Chicago Democrats don't want to see the Bears move out of their city. So it's going to be very hard for the Bears to get any bill passed without support from Democrats who represent parts of the city.
Right. Even if they agree with like the principle of it, they don't want to cast a vote that essentially makes the red carpet down the Kennedy and the Jane Addams tollway go right to Arlington Heights. They don't want that vote on their record, and they don't want to leave the team, lose the team.
Exactly. And Representative Cam Buckner, who I think he actually represents Soldier Field, he filed a bill this week that's more just a conversation starter at this point. But it kind of shows that he, you know, generally supports this concept the Bears are looking for. But it would, if such a law were to pass, sports stadiums would be subject to so many requirements that, in theory, it could really just sink the Bears from making this move.
Interesting.
At all.
Ooh, okay. We'll be watching that. I'm also watching the news on Thursday of how much the governor made in income in 2024, which is more than $10 million, which is a lot, including some money from gambling, $1.4 million from gambling. Governor Pritzker is a busy person. People may agree or disagree, but he's all over the place. And when does he have time for gambling, Ben? Like, what? What?
That I wondered the same thing. You know, it's kind of funny to imagine the governor sitting at a table playing blackjack in Vegas, but that sounds like that's exactly what happened. The governor said that, you know, when his tax returns came out, it showed that he made $1.4 million on gambling. And he told reporters on Thursday that he went on vacation with his wife and a couple of friends to Vegas. And in his words, he got really lucky at the table. That's kind of what it seems happened here. He, you know, governor's worth almost $4 billion. He wouldn't say how much, you know, he put down, but he said he loves to play cards, and I guess he just had a really good night in Vegas.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I mean, like, maybe other politicians would get blowback, and perhaps the governor will get some from maybe some people that say, hey, look, we're just struggling to make ends meet here. You're out blowing. You could have lost millions, maybe $1 million. That's good for you. But I don't know if he gets that moniker because he's, you know, pegs himself as a progressive Democrat who wants to fight for lower and middle classes. Whether you agree with him or disagree with him how he does it, I don't think he's going to get the flack that maybe some other wealthy politicians would get.
Yeah, a lot of people seem, you know, online to be pretty amused by it. Just the fact that, you know, such an important politician is out here making such money on playing cards. But, you know, Republicans in Springfield, they held a news conference and they responded to it. And they said it kind of shows that the governor is just out of touch with regular people because regular people aren't going to be putting down the size of the bets that the governor did to make that much money. So I, you know, if there's ever a presidential campaign in the future, it certainly could be something that does come up.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the grocery tax, talking about things that do impact individuals in the state. Now, walk me through the timeline of this. This was we used to have a statewide grocery tax. that was eliminated, right? And now individual communities are kind of wrestling with, should they enact their own?
Yeah, so last year the governor signed legislation that eliminates the statewide 1% grocery tax beginning in 2026. But the bill, because all the revenue from that tax goes to local communities, none of it went to the state, the bill created a way that the communities could just enact an ordinance to keep the grocery tax in place rather than, you know, going through the referendum process that municipalities have to go through in order to create a new tax. So what came out of this is that on October 1st was the deadline for municipalities to pass an ordinance and report it to the state. And the data shows that basically half of Illinois communities decided to enact their own grocery tax because in a lot of cases it would have significantly hurt a couple communities' budgets if they have a lot of grocery tax or grocery stores. You know, they could lose a couple $1 million in tax revenue with the tax going away. So, you know, the tax is going away statewide, but more than half of Illinoisans are ultimately going to still be paying this tax.
Yeah, and I know Chicago, the mayor's recent plan eliminates the tax. That could save people $50 to $60 a month. We'll see. I know the mayor has a lot of plans in Chicago for the budget to try and fill a gigantic gap. Ben, can you just explain why the governor did that? I guess I feel like, did he just want to have a check mark of, look, we've lowered your taxes, that, see, we got rid of a state tax that people don't like, but then it just shifts the responsibility to the communities to have to figure it out themselves? I just don't get the chess moves here.
Yeah, honestly, it's a pretty political move, I think, on the governor's part, because on his end, there's really no political risk because the headlines are going to look good. The governor is eliminating a tax, and we have a lot of taxes in Illinois, and it doesn't hurt the state's revenue either, which is important. The governor would certainly, I don't think, approve of getting rid of this tax if it would hurt state revenue. So he gets a lot of good attention for it. He's constantly talking about it as one of the various things Illinois Democrats have done that, you know, tries to make life more affordable for people. The reality is, obviously, a lot of people are still going to be paying it because it hurt a lot of communities who decide to go in and enact their own tax. So not a lot of people are going to see the benefits from it, but I think it's important to note it's, you know, it's 1%. So, you know, it really just saves people a couple dollars a year, maybe, you know, upwards of $100 a year, maybe for a single person, a few hundred for a family. So it's not a significant amount of tax savings that was really signed, but it sounds really good because people do struggle with grocery prices right now.
Yeah, this is a John Hansen aside. I don't think you get credit for cutting the tax if it didn't impact the revenue of the government that you run, meaning he doesn't have to feel, as you just said, the pinch of a tax cut, and because it doesn't impact his budget, but if instead shifts that burden to the other communities. Ben, we're out of time. We'll have to go read your story at Capital News Illinois about the deficit that we are running into this fiscal year, or we'll cover it next time we have you on, my friend.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me, John.
Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. And please, it's a nonprofit newsroom. They do great stuff. They cover our capital like nobody does, and this is important information. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to wrap things up ahead of Northwestern football here on WGN.